Every day is filled with opportunities to express yourself. And with an everyday piece from Blue Nile, you can do it without saying a word. Blue Nile's collection of diamond jewelry is the ultimate statement, with sparkle that elevates any outfit. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, their diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There, welcome to Tell Me Tales podcast. Thanks for joining me again. I am super excited to bring you this conversation that I had just yesterday, Saturday the 24th of February, with Jackson Bursell and Cassie Cohen. I didn't realize who they were this time last week, and that kind of annoys me a bit because they're doing some pretty amazing things in the running world. But thanks to Hamish Beaumont, who passed on their story and their contact details, and I was able to get in contact with them late last week. They are running from Cooktown up in Queensland to Melbourne, 4,000 Ks, 100 days, and they're doing that to bring awareness to the acceptance of asylum seekers and refugees and migration here in Australia. So, I just happened to be in Wangaratta at the Wangaratta Marathon Festival over the weekend. A few people I coach were running. My partner Carly was having a run in the half marathon as well. And they just happened to be running to Wangaratta that same day. So that knocked out about 45K that morning, and we caught up in a public park and we had a conversation about running, why they're doing what they're doing, some of the ups and downs along the road, and some of the strange and interesting and exciting and amazing things they've seen on their way. Pretty young guys, 24 and 22, and quite inspirational. What they've put their bodies through the last 80 something days, I think it was, at that stage when we were having this conversation. I must let you know before we start that we did meet in a public park and it was like 30k wind, so was a bit reminded of Nobioka Marathon. Did have the good mics there, but they picked up a bit. The good mics are good, but they kind of pick up everything. So there's a couple of times in the first maybe 5 minutes. Other than the first 5 minutes, it's pretty good. But a bit of a wind gust comes through. Tried to cut it out a bit, but I'm no kind of technology editor, but I do my best with these kind of things. But stick with me through that, and as I'm sort of saying, 98% of this kind of conversation is top-notch quality. It's just the 2% where you kind of get a gust here and there. That's a bit annoying, but it's well worth sticking through. Amazing young people. Couldn't believe I kind of got the opportunity to spend an hour with them on a Saturday afternoon, and super inspired what they're doing. Please reach out to them. They're doing some amazing stuff. They get to Melbourne during the week this week, so if you listen to this before they get there late next week, really hit them up and say you heard them on Tell Me Your Tales. Thanks again for listening, guys, and enjoy this conversation with Jackson Bursell and Cassie Cohen. Tell Me Your Tales, because of sitting in a park in Wangaratta. First time I've had two guests at the same time, and first time I've done it in a public park before. So thanks for coming along, Jackson and Cassie.
Thanks for having us.
Beautiful. And you guys have had a big day running. We'll get into all those things in a minute, but I always get the guests to introduce themselves. So did you guys want to maybe feel free to take that whatever way you want and introduce yourselves?
Sure. So I'm Cassie Cohen and I'm 22 years old. Feels a bit like an Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah, doesn't it? You'll get the microphones running like 5 minutes.
I don't know. I've been running probably since I was, I started little athletics when I was 8 or something. But never really been anywhere near the top or anything. I sort of found that the further I go, the better I get, but still not anywhere near elite level or anything. So, I just like to get out there. And when I got to uni and got involved with Melbourne Uni Athletics Club, that's kind of where I got more into it and met heaps of people who were much faster than me, and loved watching them run, but sort of was always a bit of an aspirational runner. And just wanted to take on a new challenge with Bounding Plains to Share.
Yeah, so we'll get to that straight away. Mind you, Jackson, we will get to your introduction in a second. But yeah, you guys are running from where are you going from? Cooktown to Melbourne, 4,000 k's. Which is scary stuff. But Jackson, you maybe want to introduce yourself as well, and then we'll get on to what you guys are trying to achieve.
Yeah, I'm Jackson Bursell. I'm 24, and it's been about 4 hours since I last ran. I tried to tie something that isn't necessarily like super close with running with running, and that is sharing stories.
Which makes it, I don't know, I know the running community really well, and maybe that's why I started the podcast, but runners also love sharing stories, so it kind of does mix in really well. And when you're out there running for long periods of time, you got to talk and you got to share stories, and there's people that want to know your story as well, so it kind of does gel pretty well there. So 4,000 k's, pretty much 40k a day, is that what we're thinking? 4,000 k's over 100 days, is that kind of, the metrics?
Yeah, it'll be exactly 100 days when we finish six more days of running.
Days.
So it's been 11 rest days, so we've actually had, it's actually an average of like 45 k's a day when we're running, but because we've had 11 rest days, then it kind of evens out a bit.
So you're just running marathons every day with 11 rest days in there, pretty much. Bit over.
Yeah.
Where'd the idea come from?
I don't know. I'd always sort of wanted to take on a massive challenge like this, and so I kind of just came to Jackson with the idea, and originally it was from Perth to Sydney, but then Jackson had the great idea of telling the stories as well, and it didn't really make sense to go across the desert when we're trying to meet people.
Yeah,
so
not see anyone for
So he suggested that we should go from the top to the bottom, and Cape York was just a little bit too wild up there, so we shifted a little bit further south to Cooktown, thanks to his suggestion.
Because maps, I'm a bit of a map fiend. I love maps. I've like a Rogaining background. It's how I kind of came into running, was more that navigational side. And so not many people realize that our map, our global map, is distorted. And so things closer to the equator actually look a lot smaller than things further away. So people might look at Victoria and think it's huge, but it's actually only going to take us 6 days of running to do all of the Hume from all. I mean, we're just off the Hume, but basically that route all the way in from Albury. But it took us 55 days to do Queensland. We were running the same distances every day. It's 800 kilometres, 850 from Cairns to Cape York. And you look at that on a map and you say, doesn't look that far. It's Sydney to Melbourne distance to get from, the furthest north settlement on the coast, which is Cooktown, to then all the way up to that. Yeah. I have friends who've run from Canberra to Cape York. And he told me this crazy story of basically the chafe he had was so bad when he was doing that last section, because it's so humid up there and there's so few people, he just took his shorts off and ran naked.
You could do that, couldn't you? maybe not around town, but and so where'd the I know you've done a bit of stuff with the Everesting before. Is that some fundraising and raised what, 120,000 I read somewhere as well, so was that kind of the kickstart behind this project?
Yeah, it definitely provides a lot of I guess, confidence in your ability to plan a big kind of logistical feat. Because, I mean, we're doing this supported. We don't carry much when we're running, just enough water to get us through the next hour and a half sort of thing.
Yeah.
Planning to make sure that we've got support crew for each stage. We've got a camper trailer that pops out. We sleep in that most of the time. We sleep in that because we're, in towns where we don't have friends, or we're in town at all.
No town, yeah.
And so that's, having a kind of background in event organising and management gives you the confidence to be like, we can do it.
We can pull it off, And like the relationship between you guys, like how did you choose each other as, it's a long time to be running that amount of distance with someone. So where'd you guys meet and stuff? And how'd that all come about, that you've come just the two of yous? And it's a Go for it. Tell me.
We actually met because of Neverest, the event you were talking about. So I was in Canberra at, like, 2 years ago and just heard about the event. And I'm from Melbourne, so I wanted to bring it to Melbourne. So I just messaged the Facebook page and Jackson was on the other end and he was like, great, I want to expand it. So I just helped him bring it to Melbourne. And then, like, actually the second time we met, we did the Oxfam Trail Walker together because someone in my team had pulled out and we just needed someone at the last minute who was able to run it.
Yeah.
So Jackson jumped in, came from Canberra to Melbourne.
2 weeks' notice?
Yeah.
For 100K.
Yeah.
So we've just been, like, organising things since then. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So maybe unpack the Everesting stuff as well, because I've heard about it before on Strava, like a lot of people doing the cycling and stuff, but you weren't on a bike, were you?
No, so I have a friend who's a keen cyclist, and I'd seen quite a few of my friends in Canberra, Canberra's a big cycling community too, do it on bikes, and, like, I'm not a bike, not a bike rider, so I was like, well, maybe we can do this on foot, and, you know, it seemed pretty crazy, and I remember at that time, this massive earthquake had struck in Nepal. And I'd had the idea about maybe doing an Everest or something like that on foot, picking a hill, you know, going up and down until your total vert reaches the equivalent height of Mount Everest. And then the earthquake happened and I was like, well, what a perfect opportunity, because it's so symbolic of what, you know, Mount Everest, the highest peak in Nepal, they need help right now. And this is something crazy. I could get myself and a bunch of mates, and I'd actually planned to go over there later that year. And so, you know, I remember my mate, I called him up, I said, look, you know, we're going over there in October, this was in April, I'd feel kind of bad just going over there, it's an Aussie thing, you want to help out if you're
going to,
you know.
So were you going over to climb Everest, was that your
We were going over to do base camp, climb the actual thing, we were just going to have a geese.
You're about to run from one point of Australia to
Yeah, well, things have really escalated since then. And we set off, and in that first year in 2015, there was about 60 of us in Canberra going up and down. Most were just doing it we had like a teams component, so people could do it, and we had this big board. We hand wrote it in the first year, and people would add a little tally to their box, and so we counted what the total vertical climb was of all the people in the event. And there was one guy, Andrew Donaldson, he's a pretty experienced ultramarathon runner who turned up on the day, and he was the only reason why I finished it solo, because he pushed me the whole way.
We did
it together, and about three, each lap was 500 vertical meters, and it took us about an hour, 2Ks up, 2Ks down from this dam just outside of the ACT. And about three laps to go, I was on the ground. I was horizontal and just dying. And he said, no, we're finishing this. We started together.
Get it done.
So where does
the, you know, we'll get into why you guys are going from the top to the bottom and helping people out and sharing, you know, people's story and trying to raise some money for a great cause as well. But where does that sense of help comes from? Like, what you guys, you know, it's talking to you for 10 minutes now. It seems so passionate to make other people's lives better. So where did that start for both you guys?
I don't know, actually. I guess it's just fun to sort of use athletic feats to sort of help other people and kind of do it in more and more creative ways. So Jackson obviously had the idea for Neverest and I kind of just jumped on board with that one. But it's nice for this one that we kind of came up with the idea together and sort of added different bits in ourselves. And as far as we're aware, like, people, no one's really done something as crazy or some might say stupid as this before. it's pretty fun to sort of take on a new challenge, and it's nice to do something different and sort of change people's minds about what can be possible. Because before this, a lot of people sort of probably said to me, especially because I've got less running experience than Jackson, that, you know, you're not going to make it and you haven't really trained enough and you haven't, like, you don't know what the heat's going to be like up there and that kind of thing. And I mean, that probably just drove us to get there even more, basically. But it's nice sort of to say those people now, like, look, it's possible, and imagine what you can do too. If you, like, also try something that you don't know if it's possible.
So are you running marathons when you're, like, training with Melbourne Union stuff, or?
I've actually never run a marathon.
Never run a marathon.
Now I've run, like, 83 or something.
That's insane, isn't it?
But I've done, like, the Oxfam Trail Walker, I've done Neverest, and,
half
with
marathons?
Melbourne Uni, I've done half marathons.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I'd said to my coach at Melbourne Uni that I wanted to run a marathon. He was like, maybe just wait a few more years.
A bit
so I was
young,
a bit too scared
yeah.
to tell him about this. And he's just found it on Strava and he's not sure what's going on, but he's okay with it.
And Jackson, for you, like that sense of helping people?
I think there was, so I was before this, I was on the Australian team for cross country skiing.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so I think a lot of runners and elite athletes would probably be able to relate to this. What happens is when you get to like a level where sport is like a big part of your life, you become quite selfish. You know, it's a lot about your recovery is all about you, and particularly in individual sports like running, cross country skiing, individual endurance sports, you know, long bike riding, that sort of stuff. Everything, yeah, you just start to kind of become a bit selfish, or and it never sat well with me. I hated just sitting around and someone would, you know, someone would do something for you, or, you know, if we'd be at an event, you know, you wouldn't want to, yeah, tie yourself out too much. And I was just, one day I was like, I just hate this aspect of what I'm doing at the moment, which is all focused on like just me performing and me, you know, doing something and people do stuff for me. And I, you know, it just never sat well with me. And I think that, yeah, that was the moment in 2015 when I started to step back from skiing a bit more and was like, it's so incredibly rewarding when you organize an event or do something that's so much bigger than just yourself. Mm. And yeah, I remember there was like a bit of a point where I was like, and you get hooked, you know, when you start doing events that raise money for other people or organizing events for other people or pushing your body and using that as like a kind of touchstone to then, yeah, I guess raise money or spread awareness. And you just want to keep doing it because, yeah. I mean, yeah, ultimately it was what made me feel more fulfilled than when I was just competing for myself.
Yeah, and I guess when you get in those dark places and you know it's not just for you as well, like it's, yeah, you're doing it for a lot of other people. And, yeah, just on the skiing though, like, yeah, you went to the World Champs in 2015 in Sweden. Like, you kind of brushed over that. You know, it was like almost a hobby that you were doing the way you kind of described it, but it must have been pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, look, cross-country skiing in Australia is a very small sport. You know, the community is tiny. You still, to try and compete against those nations, the Scandinavian nations,
yeah.
you do have to put in a lot of effort. And even training for this run, I remember I was looking at my training diary and I did 700 hours in 2015. I only did 600 and something in 2017. So I was actually, I used to do more training back when I was a skier because it's a low impact sport. We, you know, have to do a lot of upper body work as well as lower body work. I mean, people in the know might know that it's rated as one of the highest, like,
VO2
max.
Through the roof,
through the, I mean, mine isn't particularly
what
high.
What was it back in the day? Can you remember?
It was 74.
Yeah, still massive.
Decent,
yeah.
But, like, there are guys on my team who have 89. You know, he's got the Australian record. He's currently at Pyeongchang.
Yeah, right,
And,
that's why, yeah.
Yeah, and look, that background is definitely... It definitely influences, my running now. And I think it's been really great on this project and this trip because, you know, when you're training with a team and you're always moving around, it's a bit like this. We're always moving around. You have to, you know, for us, we'd be left behind if we didn't get to training on time. So I'm always very, you know, punctual and always about getting things done quickly and efficiently. So all those things have influenced, I guess, who I've become. In that sense, so it's a weird kind of hybrid now.
Yeah. Well, you're 24 now, yeah? So, like, yeah why'd you finish up so early, like the cross-country skiing?
So I'd gotten to a level, I was racing what's called sprint cross-country skiing, which is about 3.5 minutes, super high intensity. And I managed to get onto the World Cup circuit at the start of, in 2015. And so that's, I guess, the highest level of that kind of sport. And I was competing against the best in the world and getting absolutely thrashed. You know, week in, week out, we'd move from nation to nation in Europe. And I just couldn't make that next step to kind of break into what they call the top 30, which is a bit of a standard in the sport.
Yeah.
And I think I knew what I needed to do, which was I was still studying full-time at ANU and did a law and commerce degree there. And it just got to the point where I couldn't do the 25 hours of training a week and the study. And something had to give, and I wasn't prepared to give the study away. And that's when I started doing more running, because, you know, running you can get away with 13-14 hours a week and be competitive somewhat. I was never an amazing runner, to be honest. It was more of a hobby. That was kind of it, the decision was made for me, I guess.
Awesome. So take me back, when does the the first email go back and forth or text messages for this kind of, yeah, and how long ago? Like, obviously, you nearly finished your, what, 30, how many days in? 32?
83 was today.
Oh, no, sorry, 100 days. Not, I was thinking 40 days. Yeah, 83, yeah. So you're nearly finished. But, yeah, how long ago did the planning have to start taking place? And where did the initial idea come from?
Well, it was August 2016.
Yep.
So, I guess there's a lot of things that went into it, but the kind of first time I remember talking about it was when I was applying for, like, grad jobs because it was my last year of uni, and I was trying to, I was just sort of joking to a friend that if I didn't get anything, then I'd just go and run across the country or do something like that. And she kind of laughed for a second, and then she was like, you know what, I can actually see you doing that. And I was like, yeah, maybe. And then, like, it kind of became, I just didn't want to go to a job and then just work in that job for 40 years and then
retire
and pay bills and
cash
only do
super,
that.
So, yeah.
So I was like, it'd be nice to do something different. And then I had a feeling that Jackson would be interested, just because knowing that he does a lot of things like this. But I'd already set up a meeting with the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, who we're fundraising for, and they were on board. And pretty much as soon as I mentioned it to Jackson, he was like, all right, well, like, I'll help you plan the route and I'll come and, like, help you with support crew and that sort of thing. And then about 2 minutes later, he sent another message saying, actually, I'm coming as well.
Yeah.
And kind of just kept going from there.
Couldn't help yourself, Jackson?
Nah. Yeah. I was also looking for something, I guess. I finished uni at the end of November.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. I haven't applied for any jobs. I'm still
still running across the country.
Yeah.
You're doing some pretty amazing stuff.
A friend asked me that, someone was interviewing us the other day, and they said, "Oh, you know, so where do you live and what do you do?" I'm like, "Well, I live in a caravan and I run across the country." You know, that's the description of what I do.
Could we describe it as unemployed?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so you're probably working harder than everyone else who's actually got a job working in one concept or another. So, yeah, really interesting stuff. So. Then I'm sure there's a lot of planning behind the scenes. So you've had this meeting with ASRC, the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, and then what happens after that? Like, are you mapping it or getting permits, or like what has to go into the next stage of it?
We did a couple of brainstorming sessions, and I was up with some of my other adventure friends after I'd finished uni at the end of 2016. Yeah, and I was looking over some route planning. I was still organising Everesting event. So I always had, I was just juggling so many event balls that it was tough to fit some of the planning in. But I remember a friend saying, "Oh, are you sure you want to do Perth to Melbourne or Perth to Sydney?" And I said, "Oh, maybe, you know, now that we've wanted to," I messaged Cassie saying, "Look, I think we should," because I wanted the focus to be on something other than ourselves.
Yeah.
And I was really passionate. I really enjoyed the Humans of New York Facebook page, you know, that shares stories.
Yeah.
And I was like, why don't we do something like that, but for refugees and asylum seekers? And we expanded it to migrants, just because particularly up in some places in Queensland, there hasn't been any settlement in some of those towns. So, and there were some really colourful migrant history up there, you know, Italian and Sicilian cane farmers. So we wanted to highlight some of those stories too. And so once we added that in, I was like, well, I'll plot a route that kind of goes past all of the major population centres. And so if you look at our route, it actually encompasses quite a large proportion of the Australian population. So that was what informed the route.
Yeah, awesome. And then, like, when you're looking at the map and the route and stuff, like, obviously, are you guys running on, like, the side of busy highways and stuff? Or, like, you have to look at some back roads that, no one uses?
We had about 40 days on the Bruce Highway.
Did you? Yeah,
in Queensland, so we were pretty happy to leave that behind us, I think. But Jackson's, like, done a great job on the route, and most of the time we're on nice back roads that are really scenic, and it's been really fun.
And take me back to day one, so, like, you're lacing up, you're fresh. No, actually, take me back to the training, because, like, how do you prepare? Or do you prepare, or you just get fitter as you go? Like, what happened?
We tried to prepare.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, as many people would know, you know, you have the best of intentions, a training plan, stepping up, building up your volume. I was like, okay, by August we should be doing 120 Ks a week. And, I mean, neither of us were anywhere near close to that. I mean, now we run 300 Ks a week, no worries. But back then, we couldn't even do 120.
Was that because, like, just motivation, or, you know, the body just wasn't coping with the mileage, or why weren't you doing the 120k weeks?
It's a bit of a mix of things. I mean, I was working full-time and Jackson was studying full-time. He did like 10 subjects last year or something ridiculous. But also just because I kept getting injured, like I had a torn calf muscle, so I was out for 7 weeks, and I sprained an ankle, so I was out for 3 weeks, and just kept having all these injuries that, like, kind of sort of played on the confidence a bit and sort of made me wonder how we're going to get through 3 months of running.
Yeah,
but,
like an alarm bell's going off when you're, you know, straining this and rolling ankles and the confidence low when you're, this is tackling 120Ks a week, not 120Ks in 3 days.
Yeah, definitely.
I think what happened for me was there was, like, when I got into my final exam block, I just spent so much time sitting down. I think my glutes were just wrecked, and then everything was just out of alignment. I had this tib post niggle that just wouldn't go away. And actually, like, I remember when I go back and look at my Strava for the 3 weeks leading into the run, I did like maybe 100 Ks over 3 weeks. Like, I did nothing, then I did 10, and then in the last week I did like 60. But I could, and that was all made up of like 10K, like little, like, waddles, because it was just so painful. And I was like, how the hell, you know, a couple of my friends were like, oh, you know, are you ready? And I'm like, I can barely even do 8Ks without stopping. I have no idea. But I rested it up. And our first, the plan for the first week was to build up. So the first week was kind of 30K days. And so that was good. I definitely probably wouldn't have made it if we'd had like a couple of big 50K days to start.
Yeah.
And then just, building into it, and slowly over about a month, everything takes a long time when you're running such long distances.
Yeah.
But little niggles, you can kind of work them out over days. And sometimes if something goes wrong, like something twinges, you're like, okay, well, tomorrow I've got to do this, and the next day it might be a little bit better, and the next day it might be... So you kind of have to prepare yourself if you get an injury for like 4 or 5 days to kind of, if you want to build your pace back up to what you were doing before.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting kind of mental, meal, but...
Yeah, especially when, like, I'm the same. Like, I did 10K this morning, it was hard work, and I was just jogging along and... But yeah, I think when you're mentally preparing for 40K, you've just put in a different space in your brain, and somehow you get it done. So back to that, like, so you fly up there, or you drive up there with a crew, or take me to day one. What time of the day you starting? How's the nerves?
Day one was interesting, actually. So we had to drive up because we had the caravan.
Yeah.
So we did about 3 days of like 10-hour solid driving, and we sort of just...
You're driving over your route? Like, you're like... Oh,
no, we went inland.
After,
quicker.
Yeah.
But on day one, we decided to start at 10 a.m. because we had a short day. We had 28 Ks, which is the shortest day we've done the whole trip, actually. And because we wanted people to turn up, and we thought if we started at 6 a.m., people probably wouldn't come. So we ended up having like 3 counsellors and someone from the local paper turn up, and my dad, who was support crew at the time.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a massive crowd. But we had like... It turns out there's 3 Captain Cook memorials in the town of Cooktown, and I'd sent everyone who was turning up to the wrong one, which we discovered about 10 minutes before we went to start. So we were standing on top of this massive memorial, like, which is really scenic, like this beautiful mountain in Cooktown, and then we had to quickly drive down to the bottom where there was a statue that... I'd accidentally sent everyone
to that
one.
Yeah,
so it was a bit of a false
start.
Off to a good start.
Yeah.
So we lost about 2Ks from the run.
And then nerves and stuff. Like, is it like, that anticipation? It's all this time of planning, and you're about to take your first step. Get your satellites and your Garmin's ready, and push go.
Was a bit. I think because I'd just been so injured in those last 3 weeks leading up to it, I'd put my expectations down at my shoelaces. I was like, look, if I get through the first week, that's fine. And because we had that stories component, I was like, at least there's something else. We'd actually, we were so uncertain that we'd packed bikes as well. So we had bikes. We've taken them off now because we know we're going to make it. But we had bikes on the roof of our car all the way to Sydney, and they never moved from the roof of the car. They literally sat there, and the gear train on my bike's rusted on because it just sat there in the bloody rain and salt up there.
Yeah.
Because I was pretty certain, well, not certain, but I was thinking that I was probably going to have to end up on the bike after 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, so not a bad backup plan though. Like, still got to respect in cycling that distance. Yeah.
But yeah, so that was our fallback. But yeah, the further you run, the more determined you become to finish it on foot.
And it mounts too, doesn't it? Like, it's the more you've got behind you, it's kind of, you don't want to let go of that. North Queensland, what you're kind of spreading awareness for is probably renowned for not being aware or passionate or, with the migration and the acceptance of refugees and asylum seekers and things like that. How did it go down?
We had low expectations. We came in knowing that we were sort of starting in the toughest area because obviously starting up north, people are renowned for having not necessarily positive views towards people of different multicultural backgrounds, but what we actually found was that people were so welcoming and warm, and everyone up there is like full-on Australian spirit. Like, they want to welcome you into their home and they want to know what's going on, and if you ask them a question, you'll still be standing there an hour later because they'll still be talking. So what we found that is that a lot of people might actually have negative views towards people of different multicultural backgrounds just because they haven't actually met someone from a different background, or there's no one living in their community who was born somewhere else or who had to flee from somewhere else. So that's kind of what we're, the whole point of our campaign is to basically introduce these people to people who might not necessarily agree with people from a refugee or migrant background, and basically say, look, these refugees are actually in your community. They really just want the best for you and for everyone in the community. They're your community workers, your nurses, your doctors, your teachers, and they're really just, you know, they're not that different to you.
Just
and
people,
if you and if you hear their stories, you'll realise how similar you are, and you might even be inspired to go and chat to them if you see them out in the town. So I think once we kind of got that message across, we didn't have any negativity really up there, and we had people like truck drivers pulling over on the side of the road wondering why we were still running, because they'd seen us running yesterday on the Bruce Highway and we're still running on the Bruce Highway today, and have we stopped overnight or were we just running? And once we explained what we were doing, they were all really positive, and that's probably not what you'd expect of your typical truck driver in Queensland, but we were really inspired by what we found.
Yeah, and it's about that knowledge, isn't it? Like, when you hear the stories and, you know the people a bit firsthand, and you can have that kind of that content kind of put it straight in your face like you're talking about in a genuine conversation, it just makes the world of difference.
It's such a human issue.
Yeah.
And I think that was why when people think, oh, you should be doing more fundraising, because the fundraising really hasn't been like super central to our project. And they're like, a lot of people who have done crazy things like this will raise huge amounts of money. But for this issue, you know, if you want society to get along more harmoniously, money isn't actually going to solve it. You actually need to meet people and hear their stories and put their actions in the context of what they've had happen to them, or the decisions they've had to make to come to this country. So I think that was really cool that when we did kind of put that in context, when we were showing stories to people who we might have been staying with, who'd say, oh, you know, I think refugees have it a bit too easy these days. You know, they get a lot of handouts and
take away jobs and
yeah. And then they see that, you know, we'd show them some of the stories that we'd published on our Facebook page, you know, videos of people living in their community and their teachers and their doctors and nurses, and you know, and then they'd say, oh, those are good people.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, they are.
They are.
So that was quite heartwarming.
Yeah. So the concept, obviously, you share one story a day on the social media and stuff. And then how'd you get all that research? Like, I'm sure finding 100 different stories was hard work as well.
Yeah, so that's kind of my role in the project, is to reach out to all the different sort of, there's multicultural groups and councils, so I've spent a lot of time on hold to local councils, trying to find out if they have a multicultural officer, and often they don't. But yeah, just sort of reaching out to the local communities or like the local universities and seeing if they know anyone from a refugee background, and often sort of we'll talk to someone, they'll be like, oh, I've got a friend who's got a like an interesting story as well, so we'll go and chat to them. So they come from all different places, but that's kind of the point of it as well. We wanted, and we really wanted to focus on people who hadn't been celebrated in the media before, because often, I mean, we put the call out for people to nominate themselves, and there's a nomination form on our website.
That on your website, yeah.
But we haven't really had many people nominate themselves, and we think that's just because people with a refugee background are so humble that they don't realise how much they've achieved just by getting here, and how much, how much even just learning English or like getting a job, how incredible that is given their tough background. So when we say like remarkable stories, people are like, oh, well, I'm not remarkable. And then we hear their stories and we're like, of course you're remarkable. Yeah. So we've sort of done most of the reaching out that, we've been amazed by the people we've met.
So good. So back to that like first week, so you know 28k day the first day, and then like how's the body start responding? Because I'm sure if you go from low amount of mileage to there 20-30k days straight up, it's got to start banging up a bit.
I really struggled in the first half. At about day seven, I ITBs blew up and I had to take a whole day walking. We walked 38k that day,
which is nearly harder than running in a way.
Yeah, it was
so long.
At the end of that day, I was like, no, I'm running tomorrow. I don't care how much it hurts.
In the heat, you're running until like 2 in the afternoon or walking until 2 in the afternoon, and it's just ridiculous,
So like injuries or like anything serious, or just like a couple of just niggles here and there?
Now or then?
No, like at the start. Because like a doctor or a physio or a running coach wouldn't recommend going from, not much to 300k a week.
What is so bizarre, and this might be radical, but I'm sure there's a few people who might listen who would know this, is that you would think an overuse injury couldn't get better by using it more, but from my experience, it does. That's really radical. And I didn't think so. I thought, I'm absolutely cooked after day seven, and I'm just going to be walking the rest of the way to Melbourne. And I was like so happy the next day to be running at 8 minute Ks again, like just shuffling. And I was like, I can do this. I could do this all the way to Melbourne. And then 2 days later, I'm doing 7:30s, and then I'm doing sevens. And then after a month, I'm back to 6:30s. And then, a week after that, I'm back to sixes. And now I can do like 5:50s today. So like, you can, and it's actually outrageous, because even up there, my average sleep was 6 hours 20 a night, and we'd be running for 5 hours 40. So we're almost running more than we're sleeping, and you can still recover. Like, running is just the activity that we were born to do, and I think the more you do it, if you've got the time to run for 4 hours a day, like I find the pains that I might have at 2 hours don't exist at 4 hours, and I would never have thought to push through after 2 hours, but there's this nirvana at 5 hours that happens almost every time I get there. I'm like, whoa.
I've heard trail runners and ultra guys talk about this, because I'm like, my longest run before a marathon might be, I've done 1 3-hour run in my life, but usually preparing for a marathon, it's 2.5, 2:35, so it's a whole different, like almost sport in a way when you start going that far. And Cassie, like, how did your body go?
Sorry, I was going to say you're going a lot faster.
But still, like, I'd going out and doing 35k at 4 minute K pace is a lot easier than going and doing 45k at 5.5 or 5:30s or 5 or 6 minutes. And I think that jarring in the time you're on your feet. But Cassie, like, how did your body like react straight up?
Straight up, I was actually pretty, like, surprisingly okay. So probably for the first 2 months, I was like, oh, I'm still going. This is great. But maybe for the last sort of couple of weeks, I've had a bit of my legs just going, nah, I'm done. And I'm like, no, you've got to get to Melbourne still. So, but I find that, like, as Jackson said, like, as you keep going, so it might be tough for, like, the first hour, and then usually after that it just sort of gets into line and sort of realizes that you're not going to stop, so it just has to do what you want it to do. So
is there any concerns about like long-term injuries or like damage you could possibly be doing to your body though?
You have to block it out
think about that next week.
Exactly.
I'll be lying down for about a week after this.
And are you getting like treatment and stuff, like are you dropping in with physios or masseuses or
we couldn't afford it.
No. It's amazing then what the human body can do, isn't it? Like in a way. And have you noticed like your heart rate dropping or like you're getting a bit, obviously you mentioned Strava a couple of times, but are you guys tracking your heart rates or anything like that?
Yeah, I do. I'm just from the skiing background, everything was always about data. And so I was particularly up in the heat. I would always make sure that my heart rate was below my threshold. So, you know, keeping it in that, we call it level one, that like aerobic work zone. And when I'd notice, because it was always getting hot every day, it'd go up into the 30s. Yeah. So that last hour, I'd cross into our like level two, we call it, which is, you know, for me, it's like above 150 beats per minute of a pretty high heart rate. And so, like, I was always trying to fastidiously keep it down. And then as it got cooler, I was going faster, I noticed it would stay quite low. But and I noticed, like, maybe a week or two ago, I was a bit, you know, had a runny nose, and so the heart rate was up. But it doesn't seem to stop you from doing the same thing every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And, like, you must have some amazing stories. Like, does anything stand out, some interesting characters you've met? Or, like, maybe that we'll go with that first. Like, have you met some interesting people on the road?
Some very interesting characters. I don't know where to begin with that.
Yeah, like, honestly, we meet people every day. I mean, as well as going out and meeting the people who we've organised to meet, the refugees and asylum seekers and migrants, there's also all... We've met so much of Australia's retired and newly retired population in the caravan parks.
A lot of caravan park owners with interesting backstories.
In
Queensland, it's great. It's like you see someone and you start talking to them, and you can see like this kind of bubble kind of come across their head that says like, I'm about to download to you my entire life story. And then it just starts happening, and you get the 40-minute, like, this is my life from childhood to where I am, like, right at
podcast
this very
episode.
Minute.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really interesting, and sometimes you're like, well, you've had such a different life to most Australians, you know, going out and, you know, strangling horses in the outback and building replica coaches with 12 stallions, and you've driven that across the country or the desert. It's just bizarre.
Strange stuff.
Yeah.
And any, like, times where you've, you know, thought maybe we're a bit unsafe here, or, like, what are we doing? And, yeah, like, any kind of nearly SOS kind of moments?
There was one time where, like, coming into Noosa, the night before we did this, Jackson was looking at the route, and he was like, how far are you prepared to swim? I was like, not prepared.
I didn't sign up for any swimming.
And he was like, no, I'm confident, it'll be fine. Yeah. And I was like, I'm packing like a change of clothes because I don't believe you. And we got to this, like, we were in this forest, and we got to this, like, this area where we just looked across, and he was like, this is where the bridge was. I was like, there's no bridge. And then, like, for a few minutes, I was like, surely there's some better way to cross. Because it was, like, probably 15 metres across in this kind of black, fetid water that you don't want to swim in. And after, like, a couple of minutes, he was like, look, we're just going to have to swim. And I was like, all right. So we just sort of went in fully clothed with all our gear. And I just went across holding my phone up. It's apparently waterproof, but I didn't believe it. So it's just like just paddling across, and we luckily avoided any sharks, crocodiles, anything that could have been in there, and got out and kept running.
It was funny running into Noosa in, you know, an hour later, just covered in mud and yuck, and everyone in Noosa is, you know, put together, they've thought about their outfit, it's all, you know, coordinated.
My socioeconomic place of the world, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, we'd matched the colours, but only because mud is like a uniform colour.
And like animals and stuff, like have you come across any snakes or like talk us through like what some of the animals you've seen.
A few snakes, really the snakes only since like Goulburn area. I think the highway scares away a lot of and a lot of the time we were running on busy roads in the first half, and so we didn't actually see any alive snakes. Lots of roadkill, like so many dead animals, it would kind of make you sad or turn you vegetarian. But yeah, once we got off the main roads, we saw a lot more alive stuff. Yeah, a few snakes and lizards and big goannas, cassowary up in the in the Daintree.
And like, have there ever been any pinch yourself kind of moments where you know, some good sunrises or, you know, some generosity that you just didn't expect? And because it's an amazing way to live your life in a way, like it's. Yeah, it's probably not for you guys a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It's almost probably become a bit normal for you. But, yeah, any kind of pinch-yourself moments?
A couple of days ago, we were in Goulburn coming into Canberra, and this lady drove past and kind of just slowed down because Jackson was up ahead and I was just running behind. And yeah, and she was just like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, yeah, I'm fine. We're heading to Melbourne." And so she obviously wanted to know more because it's not really a normal thing to say. And then, yeah, I just explained it, and she donated to the ASRC. She's got all her change out and handed over. And then I said, you know, there's a guy running up ahead. Just as you drive past, just shout, "Go, Jackson," and keep driving. And then we got to the next rest stop, and Jackson's like, did you talk to someone? Because this lady just knew my name.
Did you tell him you did? Or like, it's just like, I'm getting stalked. She's tracking us on the internet. Yeah.
Yeah.
And go.
No, it's just it's funny because we have support crew who come up and do a week, and then one of my friends who he'd come up with his girlfriend and did 2.5 weeks with us, and then he actually came back up and did 4 days just because we had a bit of a gap in the schedule, and he was starting to talk about stuff that we hadn't, you know, experiences and people we'd met, and things that we'd done in those 2.5 weeks that had just kind of fallen out the back of my mind because so much is happening. Pretty much every day or second day, it's actually hard to kind of keep it all in your head. Mm. And so it was interesting when my friend Nick came back and he was like, "Oh, I remember we went to this multicultural group, which is in a shire that's called ISIS Shire." Which, I mean, an unfortunate name now because of what's happened in Syria. But so this group is called the ISIS Multicultural Group. And, you know, and it has this absolute character who heads it up. And we just had a very interesting lunch that they'd put on for us very kindly. And we were able to chat to some of the people who you know, were part of that group. And they shared their stories on our page. But it was such a weird lunch. And there were a lot of funny characters. And we just, because, you know, we do tend to have quite a lot of those sorts of things happening throughout. We've had lots of, very luckily, we've had lots of groups put on lunches and gatherings for us, that it's hard to try and keep it all in your head.
Yeah, I can imagine. And almost like returning to the real world could be difficult because you're so used to this kind of world that you've been in for the last 80 days.
Definitely.
Yeah, it will be pretty strange to sort of finish on, next Friday we're finishing, and to wake up the next morning and like not have a certain amount of K's ahead of us. Yeah. So like that kind of schedule ahead will be a bit different.
Yeah.
But hopefully we'll get back into running pretty soon and have some new challenges ahead.
Go to a park run and that just, seriously, it's going to be over like that compared to what you guys have been doing. And have you had like, I guess, running and kind of living out of each other's pockets a bit, like you had some good arguments along the way? Like, I know if that was me in doing it with anyone, it wouldn't matter if it's my best mate or my partner Carly or whoever, but I'm sure there's some tense times where you just give each other a bit of an earful. Running separate spots,
probably over stupid little things.
Yeah, it always is though, isn't it?
Like Cassie's alarm went off like once and she didn't get up straight away, and I was like, "If your alarm goes off, get up." Just because of my, like, you know,
I've also had that argument before.
Yeah.
Had that with my partner Carly.
But in hindsight, it's a small thing.
I've gotten up as soon as the alarm goes off every morning.
Set the scene early and then,
very
funny. And talk to me about crews. So, like, you have different crews coming through for a week at a time. That must be a good adventure for them, just to get a bit of a taste of it as well.
Yeah, I was worried that it might have been a really boring experience, but so far everyone seems to have had some cool experience, and a lot of them get to come and meet the people who we're interviewing, and sometimes they find that really cool and interesting and rewarding. But then, you know, just seeing the country, it's such a lot of people. I think a lot of Australians go overseas, go to Europe, do their gap year doing that, and, you know, we've kind of had a gap 3.5 months exploring our country, and it's, I think it's always overlooked, but there's a reason why so many Germans and Americans and other countries come here, because we've got really, really like awesome scenery, awesome people and stories and country.
Yeah, and are they like family or friends or a bit of a mix of both, or can people, like random people been signing up to come up for a week or
no random?
Doing police checks before they come along. Yeah,
we have had random people offering us a place to stay though. So we've had like over Christmas, we had this family in Rockhampton just message our page on Christmas Eve and say, like, "Do you want to come and have dinner with us for Christmas?" And we were like, "Actually, we don't have anywhere to stay in Rockhampton yet. Is it possible we could actually stay with you?" And thankfully they said yes, so we actually ended up staying there for like 4 nights over Christmas. And
so
they were
good.
Really cool, and the guy, the dad of the family, Marty Hack, is a like an ultramarathon runner as well, so he came and ran with us for one of the days, and they were just awesome, and they're still following along, and we're still in touch with them, and like we had Christmas dinner with the family we'd only met the day before, but it's kind of those experiences that you remember forever.
Yeah. And have you had many people jump in and run with you guys? I know when we were messaging originally, Cassie, I wasn't sure where you're going to be this weekend, and I was hoping to come along for a few K's, but have you had anyone, a few people jump in along the way and keep his company?
Yeah, a few. Increasingly, as we've come south, more population spaces, but probably less than I thought. Maybe that's because I'm the sort of person who, if I saw that, I would say, oh, I'm coming to run in with you guys, and, that would be really cool.
Yeah.
But, I guess it's not everyone's kettle of fish, and I can understand, come and run along
people
the
working,
Bruce Highway with us.
For 45Ks,
A friend just joined us in Albury, and he was like, I have never run any of these roads, and I've lived here, all my life.
Yeah, it's not like you're hitting the scenic, river trails and stuff like that. You're on and just, if you hit some good mountains and stuff as well, I'm just thinking, what kind
Round
of elevation?
I mean, we were doing, the biggest day we did was day 3 in the Daintree, which was like 1500 vert. But we did 2 like 1000 meter days in the Brindabellas only a week and a bit ago.
Yeah.
It was pretty much bush bashing.
Yeah.
Jackson knew the mountains really well because obviously he's lived in Canberra for a while, and he kind of just led us up, rather than winding around the mountains on the roads, he was like, all right, we're going to go up this. And it was apparently used to be a track, but it definitely wasn't a track anymore. So it's just blackberry bushes. And he was like, it'll be right. We'll be over soon and we'll be fine. And I was just avoiding snakes. trying to get through. But it was good fun.
And the darkest moment for both of you guys, the point where you're all right, this is getting really close. Well, has there been one? Where you're I'm sick of this, I don't want to do it anymore, kind of? Or does that happen every day and you roll out of it?
I mean, for me, it was probably last week when I had a really sore day with my leg, and I was like, it would be so bad to tear something now and not get to Melbourne with a week to go. I think I'd probably find a way to crawl there or something at this point, but it was still not great. But I don't think, I wouldn't describe it as a dark moment.
Yeah.
I think you just sort of keep on going. Yeah.
Jackson, any?
Yeah. Oh, definitely in that second week, when I was really struggling. But yeah, I think even then I was still trying to find ways to be how can I get there still on feet?
Yeah.
Just because once you back yourself in with something like this, it would just be such a disappointment not to get there. So and you build so much pressure and I guess hype around it.
Yeah.
But never a truly dark moment, and at no point have I ever said, I don't want to be doing this anymore. I think because as we've run, we've gotten more efficient with finding people, with editing the stories, cutting it all together, consolidating, what we know how to ask questions better when we're interviewing people, so we can get to what makes people tick. And so that's actually become more rewarding. I have a lot more fun now, or I enjoy it a lot more when I'm sitting there watching over a video interview that we've done with someone and editing it together now, even than I did at the start, because at the start I was I'm tired, because it was a lot more tasking physically back then, and the video footage wasn't good, or we just took 20 minutes to beat around the bush to ask the right questions, and so now I find it's getting better. If there's a kind of up and down in terms of your mood, I mean, because there's always highs and lows, it's trending upwards.
Yeah.
The lows are a lot higher than what they used to be.
Yeah, and the finish line's in sight. What's, you're going to have a big crowd with you guys finishing off, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, so the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, because that's where we're finishing, they're putting a lot of work into organising an event for us, so that's really nice of them. So we're getting it at 8 a.m. next Friday, and we put all the information up on our Facebook page for people to come and run with us for the last for the last 12Ks, or they can jump in for us Gump style any time along the way. So I think we'll get a bit of a crowd coming and running with us. Hopefully it'll be a really good day.
Must be, the emotions, is it starting to bubble up inside you, knowing you're, well, you're close, but you're still so, like, Wangaratta to Melbourne's still a bloody long way to be running.
It feels pretty close.
Yeah, does it? Yeah.
We saw a sign today, it said, like, 235Ks, and I was like, that is so close. Yeah. And then I was, like, interrogating my thought process, and I was like, a year ago, you would not have ever even dreamed of looking at that sign and saying, it's so close to Melbourne being 235Ks away.
Yeah, I do massive, like, I run 160K a week, and that's, like, 2 weeks. I do a lot of running in 2 weeks to hit 230Ks. Like, it's, yeah, it's a massive, what's been your biggest day of Ks?
52 Townsville, and that was just all highway, and it's, yeah, it's really hot. We went straight to get smoothies after that.
And like listening to music or podcasts or just letting the mind wander or, yeah, what? That's a long time to be running.
I prefer listening to things and Jackson doesn't really. So often like we'll kind of just run a bit separately so I can blast something out because I don't really want to have headphones on a highway.
Yeah.
So like I'll have motivational music or this morning I listened to 4 episodes of your podcast.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah.
So thanks for that. Yeah. Good motivation. I wish I'd discovered it earlier because I would have had something else to keep me entertained.
Yeah, there's plenty of good podcasts out there.
The next week, though, will be full of them, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. And just like getting a bit in the zone, Jackson, and letting the mind go?
It's weird at the start. I did listen to a little bit of music only when I was hurting. So I kind of like to save it for when I'm hurting because music kind of has a pretty big impact on me. I'll notice if I put it on, I'll be running faster and you can block it out. But I wanted to save it.
Yeah.
But then I guess because there's not that much to do, you start playing with yourself a bit like, oh, how long can I go without needing any sort of extrinsic motivator? And I just really enjoy my headspace. I think because cross-country skiing in Australia, it's a very solitary training regime. Not many people do it. So I'm used to training and running and doing all that sort of stuff by myself. So I really enjoy, just like at the start I would daydream a lot and think about different things, but now I get into this zone where it's kind of just like a meditative state, really blank, and you're just breathing, and the time just flies by. And I love it because, like, say I had a rock in my shoe the other day and I was like, oh, should I stop and like pull it out, or I was like, maybe I can block it out just by like thinking about it and I just blocked it out. And you don't feel, it's weird, like I guess I'm only just scratching the surface of tapping into that brain stem, the component that controls like reflexes and sensory bits, and you can start like stripping senses away. And I would say it's probably the weirdest part of the running is that, you know, I can go from hours 4 to 5 and I won't have even kind of realized that it's happened, and it's just kind of happened. And you know, I'll be like, you know, all these things, the cars that have come past that I've managed to get out of the way of, but it hasn't even crossed my conscious thought.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny, early on, like, sometimes we'd just be running in silence for quite a while and be running next to each other, and then, like, Jackson will say, this one time he was like, I've come up with an idea for a new political party. And he just started describing this political party that's, like, full of economists, and he's like, it's going to be called The Force because he's a really big Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
I was just like, you've been thinking about this for the last 4 hours, haven't you?
Yeah, 4 days. Yeah.
I know the feeling. I do that with, like, podcast ideas and stuff all the time. And then you get back and you've got those endorphins and you're kind of a bit higher. And then I've done it a couple of times. I'll be running, like, we should ask that guy if he can come on the podcast. And I think if I was in a sane mood, I wouldn't have the guts to, or wouldn't do it. And I'll get home and I'll just open up the phone, bang, 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 like, geez, it's done. Like, it's, and then they write back and they're like, oh, it's actually happening. Like, you know, it's kind of that weird state that you can get in with that confidence and stuff like that. What about nutrition? Like, obviously burning so many calories, and I'm sure you're not just smashing down a million gels a day, but how are you getting the carbs and, like, the replacement in?
You can take that one.
We eat pretty much anything.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing sometimes the people that we're chatting and interviewing, or from all different backgrounds, will be like, hey, you've got to come out to our local Afghani restaurant.
Yeah.
And
beautiful.
So we've just gotten used to getting our carbs from most sources, rice, bread, whatever, and getting our protein from a whole range of different things. But I guess the staples really are, like, we'll have peanut butter toast for breakfast, a banana. Sometimes I'll have muesli and yogurt if we've got a bit of time between breakfast and starting. And then during the run, we just have, like, nut muesli bars. There's always a bag of chips that's open, you know, just salt and vinegar or sea salt. And at the end, we just have two like long life, high protein, like concentrate things. So we just as long as you get that protein in.
We're all about the chocolate milk.
Yeah.
Well, and it shows as well that you don't need all that kind of sports sciencey kind of stuff. And yeah, might be a bit of a gimmick here and there with what you guys are kind of doing with just the
natural
stuff. We have a lot of electrolytes as well.
Yeah.
Like, too many apparently. we read that we've been having like 10 of these tablets.
Yeah, I know the tablets you're talking about. Yeah.
And then we read the packet the other day and it said like recommended daily dose 3 or something like
that. Yeah, not if you're banging out 50k days though, that might be a bit different.
We're worried about our heart.
Yeah.
I think your heart's being pretty good, Nick. I wouldn't be worrying too much about the heart.
It is interesting just how efficient your body gets though, because particularly when it's not cold or not too hot, or even if it is a bit hot. Like, we can run for 5 hours after having just a pretty small breakfast by, you know, most standards, 2 pieces of toast with peanut butter and a banana. And then we'll run for 5 hours and maybe eat 2 muesli bars and maybe a handful of chips every hour and a half. And that's it for 5 hours of energy expenditure. Whereas at the start, we'd have a goo every 45 minutes sort of thing. So I think just naturally, I know that a lot of people talk about, you know, should you be having like a carb burning, but I think we've just naturally kind of fallen into more fat burning.
Yeah.
Even though we still have a normal high carb diet, it's just the way that it does depend on how fast you're going. Like, I'll notice if I start to push it a bit, I'll start to need to take on more food. But kind of just sitting at a solid pace that you're used to.
You should try getting a lab. I just did some lab testing about 3 weeks ago and measuring how many carbs and fat and stuff. And I'm just smashing carbs because the pace I kind of run at and don't do much of the kind of slower jogging. But you guys would probably they'd love to kind of see your stats and data and hook that up with Melbourne Uni, Cassie. There's plenty of people there that know what they're doing. Interesting to see.
It's weird though, as soon as you finish, well, for me, it's like a switch just flicks and all of a sudden I just eat everything. I'm just like hungry for like from midday to midnight. And then it's this cycle of in the morning, you don't eat too much and you use the reserves that you've built the day before sort of thing.
Yeah. And do you ever feel like, do you have hours where you just think about the food you're going to eat that afternoon when you get to the town or the location that you're finishing up at?
Oh, sometimes I'm like dreaming of the chocolate milk at the end.
That's an interesting one. So life after you get to the finish line next week, and what happens then? Because that can be a dangerous almost spot to be in. I know I was just talking to a mate the other day. I just ran a marathon 2 weeks ago, and you kind of put all your eggs in this basket. You train and you tape and you run the marathon, and then it's like a part of you is kind of someone in your life's died because you don't think about this marathon anymore. It's not in your brain, and you guys have done that a millionfold. So what's coming up in life?
For me, I'll have about 2 weeks of like just hanging out with family in Melbourne before I head back to Canberra to start work again.
Yeah.
And hopefully I might try and tick off a marathon this year. We'll see how it goes.
I reckon you've done enough training. So 4,000 Ks in 100 days is like, I averaged, I think, 145K a week last year and did like 7,000. Like, and they're good numbers. And you're well on track to put in a huge 12 months of training.
I'm not going to keep doing this training.
You don't have to for 4 months and you can still smash most people.
That's a good base.
And Jackson, for you?
I don't know. It is tempting. I knew a mate who did something like this, and I remember the kind of 18 months afterwards, he was just pulling all sorts of amazing kind of results out of his ass with no training.
Yeah.
So I was like, I wonder if I'll get that sort of benefit or if he was just an exceptional athlete as well. So, you know, it's different. It doesn't apply to everyone. So I guess I'm at risk because I didn't really plan for life after this, because part of me, I think my subconscious thought I would probably perish mid-run. I'd just be still somewhere up on the side of the road up there. And so I haven't applied for jobs or anything. So I'll be, taking a bit of time off. I need to get a job. I'm moving back to Sydney because I finished uni in Canberra. So, I was thinking maybe I should start a running group or something.
Sense of purpose ultra and trail. Is probably there. When you just go back to the 9 to 5 and it's good, like, and I'm sure you guys are both working good jobs and you're well qualified and things like that, but it's not that sense of purpose in a way.
If we could convince more people that doing something like this is possible, like, I would happily go around preaching the virtues of long distance running. That could be something fun to
you
do
start getting
even on the side
book deals and like public speaking roles and you know what I mean.
I have absolutely no research to back anything that I say in this podcast. You know, please consult a professional. Yeah. Before embarking on 5-hour long runs.
Yeah, and overtraining, it just doesn't happen. Overuse injuries.
Yeah, if you do absolutely no intensity whatsoever, like having not run a kilometre faster than 5.5 minutes for 3.5 months, I'm actually, my friend, he's really interested to see if I can still run a 3-minute kilometre. Yeah.
All the fast twitch fibers are gone.
Gone from it. Yeah, maybe forever. Hopefully not. But
I don't think I had any to begin with.
Yeah. But even stuff like, you know, ultra races and 6-foot track and all those kind of things, it's like you've kind of, prepared yourself for things like that in doing this.
Potentially, yeah. We'll see. I mean, I bet what'll happen is I'll sit down for 2 weeks and then I'll wake up with an injury. Or I'll fall down the steps going to breakfast or something. And so,
body
at least you got to Melbourne.
They'll never be able to take that away from me.
For sure. Hey, I've taken up enough of your time, and I know you've got to meet some people shortly, but I always finish off and ask the guests if they've got a life mantra or a life quote or, you know, a bit of a philosophy that they try and live their life by. You can go as deep or as surface level as you like here. And, yeah, maybe it's changed since the last 83 days.
I don't know. For me, it's pretty running focused, I guess, but it's like every step you take gets you one step closer to your goal, which, I don't know, it definitely applies to running in this case because I just take a step forward and I'm already closer to Melbourne. Yeah. But
have you thought about that a lot, Cassie, when you've been out running? Like, it's, although it's only one step and it's, you know, 1 metre, it's still 1 metre closer to Melbourne than you were before that.
Yeah, I mean, until I accidentally start running backwards. Like, one day we actually ran backwards because, well, it's a long story, but we didn't have a support crew for 2 days, so we had to sort of support each other by running in opposite directions and changing over the car keys, and if that makes sense.
So you could see the traffic, is that, no?
No, so we had to, like, one person had to drive to the end and drop the car there, so they'd start running back towards the start, so we'd change over the car keys.
Yeah, so you were going halfway in the opposite direction.
So we actually, I was like, accidentally ran back to Cooktown. But other than that, every step has been in the right direction.
Even the fact that you guys did that to make it so legit that it was,
yeah, I mean, we're still running. Some people might be like, oh, but what if you, like, ran slightly downhill? Luckily, it was very, very flat between Mackay and Rockhampton.
If someone picks you up on that.
Yeah, I know.
That's a poor indication of somebody's, And what about you, Jackson? Yeah. You got a philosophy,
I think, well, a friend of mine said to me, there's this quote that inspired her, which is from the Dalai Lama, which is, compassion is the radicalism of our time. And I think that that's definitely struck me in relation to this project. Is, yeah, and particularly when it comes to refugees and asylum seekers, you need to be able to have that level of compassion in the first place. Like, we just wouldn't accept refugees and asylum seekers if we couldn't have any sort of level of empathy with their situation. So yeah, being able to put people's actions in the context of where they've come from, their backgrounds, and yeah, I think also for me, it's an aspirational mantra because I very, like, you know, just see things, you know, in the way that I think they should be seen. And so, yeah, I think it's good for me to break that. And
good one. Where can people, I guess, follow the journey and support and stuff? You kind of mentioned the website and things like that, and if they're listening, to be able to support in any way.
Yeah, so we've got a Facebook page called Bounding Planes to Share, so it's B for Bob, not pounding.
Yeah.
Some people have
straight out of the anthem.
Yeah, so it's a Facebook page, so all the stories are up on there, and we do a daily update on the run as well. And there's a website, which is boundingplanestoshare.com, and there's a contact form on there if you want to get in touch, or you can just message us on Facebook. There's also an Instagram, or you can, if you're keen on the running and all the stats, you can follow us on Strava. We've got a club, Bounding Planes to Share.
Yeah, right. And, like, any, I don't know, like, let's say people haven't had a lot to, I've listened to Tom Ballard's podcast a bit, and he's, like, an amazing, like, just some of the stats he shares around asylum seekers and refugees, and, like, just some maybe closing stats that why this is such an important cause and something to support. Putting you on the spot massively.
Yeah, I mean, well, so, like, last year we settled, there's, like, 17,500 Syrian refugees, so a lot of the a lot of people we spoke to, and they've been settled in. Sometimes they try to settle them in regional and remote communities to try and, you know, spread it out and get them into communities that, you know, not just kind of like ghettoize into one spot, but, you know, spread so that there's enough services and that sort of stuff. So I think for people to know that that kind of government has made a decision on your behalf because it's assessed this situation as requiring like a compassionate response, you know, it's possible for you to just completely devolve yourself of that and say, okay, whatever, or like, oh, I don't really, you know, care. But to kind of try and seek out someone who might be from that community, and or if you see someone who you think might be, and just ask, like, just strike up a conversation. Because what we found is so many people wouldn't mind sharing their story, that just no one's ever asked them where they came from or the circumstances or, you know, what they enjoyed doing or that sort of stuff. Because although you'd think of those 17,500 people, the stories must all be pretty similar, right? And I thought that. I was kind of going into this being like, oh, another Syrian, here we go. And every time I've come out being like, wow, that, you know, is such a different person to Hussein, who we interviewed last week, to Mahmoud, who we interviewed 2 weeks before that. Because everyone's unique. So I think you'd be refreshed by the humanity of the statistics if you go in and start looking at these humanity projects.
That 17,500 is pretty soft though, wasn't it, that we took on? Like, how do you guys, like, obviously petitioning against government, and like, does it do your head in sometimes, some of the things that are decisions that are getting made in Canberra?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, obviously there are a lot of negative things going on in the asylum seeker space, and you know, with Madison Nauru, we've kind of tried to, I guess, like, we're obviously, you know, we obviously share those views that a lot of people have against offshore detention and that sort of thing, but Bounty Planes to Share is kind of different to that in a way that we're trying not to focus on those sorts of campaigns that are already out there, just because that's already been done and it hasn't really worked so far, and we wanted to try something different that kind of, I guess, shares the personal side of it and isn't just a protest. We're not going out there with big signs that, you know, say close the camps, or like, not that that's, the people who do that are obviously great people as well, but we're just not really protesters at heart. So we wanted to do something a bit more personal, a bit more emotional, and probably a bit softer, but also something that might actually resonate with people, because I think when people see the protests and the, you know, people with their mouths glued together and that sort of thing, they kind of immediately shy away from it, because it's a bit too confronting.
Yeah, spreading the good stuff.
Yeah, so we're trying to make it really positive, and we hope that by doing that, people are more likely to sort of identify with it and get on board.
Like, through some of our stories, we've felt firsthand the anguish that some people feel when, you know, they may have arrived here by boat and they're living in the community now and may have lived for many years in the community, but they still don't have the right to study or to work. And just the passion with which they want an education, it makes, you know, someone like myself who, you know, studied and was, you know, involved in their studies but really took them for granted. You know, I'd be off skiing and running and doing everything else but sitting at the library studying. And here is someone who wants nothing more in this world than to go to that university. And they're going to pay for it. You know, if they're allowed to have HEX, they'll ultimately pay it off. So it's not something that really costs the government anything. But yeah, it just made me sit there and think, oh, you know, it would be great if people can, like, see these stories and really interrogate why, if they hold an opinion like, oh, well, they shouldn't be allowed to study or they shouldn't be allowed to work. But, you know, a lot of these people want to go into jobs that a lot of Australians might, you know, I mean, I'm generalising now, but they're doing a lot of unglamorous jobs sometimes. You know, nurses and doctors and aged care workers working in the community sector and space, like, you know, people who want to give back so much is a recurring theme of, and I mean, at least now we do have some statistical weight, you know, 80 something stories, 83 stories. So and overwhelmingly all of them have said just how much they want to give back to this country. So yeah, I hope if people are on the page and watching those stories that they might reconsider that opinion if they have it, that give everyone a fair go, Cassie always says, and it's a great mantra.
Well, it's meant to be the Aussie kind of mantra, isn't it? Like, yeah. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's always good when you can sit down and talk to people in detail and hear these amazing stories, and I wish you all the best the next week. And Hamish Beaumont passed me contact details early in the week, so I'm a bit late to it all, but I've been scrolling through the old Facebook and following you guys on Instagram now, and hopefully we can help out and get a few people on board on the India.
You can come and run with us to the finish.
Yeah, what day of the week is it?
Friday morning.
Yeah, I'll be on Machuca, so I'm hours away from Melbourne and got to teach my grade 2, 3, 4s, but I do have Tuesday off. That's why I was like, oh, I wonder if... I'll have to digitally... I'll put in a few Ks Friday morning and be thinking about you guys from 300 Ks up the river. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.